people who could set an example. People others would be glad to follow. Irina was gone, but Jorgis could be one of these leaders. Lucas in time would be another. If the commander left. If things changed. If. There, Lucas said, coming to a halt. What do you think? The rain had ceased. From this point, they could see a fair way ahead. Though not once had there been even a faraway glimpse of the mountaintop and its crowning rock formation. But a route forward suggested itself, at least as far as what looked like a broad flat area, perhaps housing a mountain tarn, for a stream flowed down from there, bouncing over the rocks in a series of miniature waterfalls. Many birds flew above that place, dipping down, rising up, winging off and away, a flock of swallows. Higher up, Stasia thought she saw a hawk hovering. Fresh water, she said. Fish, I expect, and... It was another sign, unless she was imagining things. Flip left her shoulder, flying upward, too late to say danger. Too late to do anything but hold her breath and hope. The flock turned and turned in the sky, a marvellous skein of feather and bone and beating heart. Flip was lost somewhere within it, but Stasia could feel the rhythm and swirl of this dance in her own body. Flip was full of joy, bursting with the thrill of freedom, and at the same time safe within the unity of her tribe, no longer closed off, no longer timid or fearful or uneasy. Flip was home. Stasia? Lucas had said something, and she'd been so wrapped up in those sensations that she'd missed it. He was looking at her strangely. What? The elation drained quickly from her body. In the sky above them, the flock was no longer making patterns, but dispersing. Some flying this way, some that. She wondered if Flip might not come back. If, like Pavel, she would disappear without trace. If she lost Flip, she would lose part of herself. You looked as if you were somewhere else, Lucas said. Are you all right? Before she needed to answer, there was a small whoosh of wings, and Flip was on her shoulder. Stasia felt again that wondrous sense of being both free and safe. Had she ever truly felt that way before? Perhaps. But only long ago, when she'd been too young to know what a precious gift it was. Thank you, she whispered to the bird, who responded by pecking her gently on the ear, as if to say, You're welcome, silly. Lucas was waiting for an answer. I'm fine, she said, thinking how pale he looked. Was he standing a little crooked, as if in pain? Getting tired, that's all. Maybe we should head back. She wouldn't ask him about that troublesome burn. Better to have a discreet word with Carolus when they returned to camp. Lucas was frowning. We should go up as far as the lake, if that's what it is, he said. Get a feel for the track, then report back and hope Alexis agrees to go this way. Come on, Stasia, it's not like you to be so cautious. She shut her mouth over the words, Are we arguing again? That's a fair climb, she said instead. Alex will take our advice on this, surely. Hmm. His face gave nothing away. What if he wants more from us? From you. What if being here is stopping us from doing the things we should be doing? Like going back to Heartwood and getting ourselves killed. She didn't say it. I'm heading back down now, Lucas. I'm too tired to climb any further. And there's no point in trying to guess what Alex wants, apart from finding out what happened to his lost friend. As she spoke, she turned and headed back. She didn't like the way he was moving, and she didn't care much for the way he was talking. He sounded almost angry. What it meant, she had no idea, but getting him back to camp seemed important. It took them longer than it should have to get down. The steepest parts were a trial. Stasia insisted on going first, though if Lucas lost his grip, there'd be no way she could stop him from falling. She thought of the climbs they'd done back at Heartwood in old times, the two of them joking, laughing, even as they put themselves to tests whose peril they scarcely thought of. They'd been so full of delight and confidence. They'd been lucky in each other. Perfect friends. She tried not to think of that vision. Someone falling, falling. By the time they reached the foot of the steepest pitch, Lucas couldn't hide his weariness, an exhaustion that was out of proportion to the effort they'd made. They stood there for a few moments, not speaking. Lucas had a hand out against the rock wall, as if he could not stand upright without support. Sit. Breathe. Stasia got out her water skin. That Lucas obeyed her without question was another sign all was not well. She drank, handed him the skin, waited without saying more. Flip found a perch nearby. Dizzy, sorry. Lucas put his head down on his knees. His voice sounded odd, distant, as if he might be close to losing consciousness. Just sit quietly for a while. And then what? She'd seen that look on someone before. An older man from the village who'd been stricken with chest pains while unloading sacks of grain from a cart. So pale, his face looked almost grey. Unable to stand straight, his voice like that of a ghost. The next thing had been a complete collapse. The man had died later that day. She wouldn't let that happen to Lucas. So what to do? Leave him here. Get quickly down to the others and fetch help? No, two would be out searching, only one on watch in the shelter. She couldn't leave Lucas on his own. If only she could send Flip with a message. Not possible. But can you hear me, Lucas? He was still conscious, at least. Stasia reached out to Flip, sending her a mind picture of Lucas in pain, unable to walk, then an image of him at the shelter, with Carolus applying a poultice to the troublesome burn, and Mattis offering a cup of tea. What do I do, Flip? I need to get him there safely. She might have known what Flip's answer would be. Stasia had carried Lucas before across her shoulders when they were testing their strength on a long-ago walk in the forest. Each could carry the other's weight. Lucas was strong from handling the goats, and Stasia from a myriad of tasks on folks' farms. In Flip's mind picture, Stasia heaved Lucas up across her shoulders without any apparent effort and strode with confidence down the track. It was an image from an old heroic story, not reality. Still, she could do it, if not with quite the same grace and ease. Flip let out a chirp, then sent another image, the little bird winging her way down toward the shelter, a messenger travelling ahead as Stasia bore her friend to safety. Good, Stasia whispered, for Flip would need neither words nor mind pictures to pass on a message asking for help or suggesting urgency. Her bird voice, her fluttering wings would speak for her. At the very least, it would warn Alexis that something was amiss. Lucas was reluctant at first, mumbling that he was too heavy, that she should just leave him. But he did not fight her when she got into position to manoeuvre him up. No talking from now on, she said. I'll need all my breath for the job. Just as well they carried little apart from the water skin, which she could hang from her belt. She was about to lift him, when the tale of the boy called Amber and his healing talisman came to her. The tale she had told Lady Elisabetta in what now felt like a different life, though it had not been so very long ago. Here, she said, and reached to unclip the chain that held the amber owl. She fastened it around Lucas's neck, her hands brushing against his curly hair, which was now almost down to his shoulders, and more than a little wild. But, shh, I'll take it back when we're safe. Now give me a bit of help if you can. Arm around my shoulder, and one, two, three. It was a long way. She was close to giving up a few times, her back fiery with pain, her steps less steady than she'd have liked. Maybe she'd misread the signs. The little cairn, the joyous dance of birds that had so captured Flip's heart. Perhaps there'd been messages of warning, You are entering another realm. Be prepared for everything to change. It was easy to believe. Since the commander came to Hartwood, their lives had been all change. Don't die, Lucas, she willed him, pausing to shift her stance a little, to balance his weight more evenly. Hartwood needs you. She gritted her teeth and walked on. No sign of Flip, no knowing if she had delivered any kind of message. As she drew near the last steep descent, with her strength ebbing fast, there was a cry of birds above her, and she saw the flock winging across, circling, dipping, rising. She stopped in her tracks, with Lucas still balanced on her shoulders. Then, as gently as she could, she squatted down and eased him onto the ground. He murmured something. It made no sense, but that didn't matter. For now, coming up toward them, she saw a sturdy figure, and then another. Mattis, Carolus. Stasia found herself smiling through exhausted tears. Never mind that the two of them and Lucas resembled hairy monsters from a tale, for all the men now wore unkempt beards, and they would no doubt look even shaggier by the time they reached the hermit. If they reached the hermit. Carolus was examining Lucas, speaking to him in a low voice, looking into his eyes. Mattis crouched down beside Stasia, who was sitting on the ground now. Well done, he said quietly. We'll need Alex too, if we're to get him down to the shelter. One of us will go back. No, wait, she said. Just give me a bit of time. Perhaps it was risky, but common sense said the risk was worth taking. The day was passing. Lucas was ashen and barely conscious, and she judged herself to be almost too tired to climb safely down the rest of the way. Almost. She could do it. But she reached out to Flip with her thoughts and saw one bird detach itself from the flock, flying down to perch nearby, not so close as to draw attention. She showed Flip an image of Alex alone in the shelter, gazing up toward them, though he would not be able to see them. She showed Flip flying down there and returning with Alex, then the three men maneuvering Lucas down the drop and carrying him to the shelter in a makeshift sling made from blankets, with herself walking along behind, the bird on her shoulder. It was only when Flip arose from the stunted tree where she was perched and flew off that Stasia blinked and became suddenly aware that both Mattis and Carolus were staring at her with some fascination. She'll bring Alex, she said. I think. Mattis grinned with apparent appreciation. Carolus gave a solemn nod. Good. The three of us should be able to get him down safely. And you. I'm all right to do it. No doubt you are, Mattis said. But allow us a little concern, will you? You've just done a mighty walk carrying a man's full weight. That takes a toll even on the fittest of bodies. Stasia found herself smiling back, tired and sore though she was. Sometimes you simply have to keep going, she said. While the other two tended to Lucas in the shelter, Stasia told Alexis about the terrain they'd seen, the lake higher up, the clearer ground, the suitable path forward. He listened without much comment, busying himself with building up the fire and warming water. Carolus washed and dried the burned area on Lucas's side, then surprised Stasia by asking her to come and offer an opinion. She was no expert on such things, but she had seen plenty of injuries while working on the farms, burns included. She'd seen already the toll his time at Dragon's Keep had taken on Lucas's body, on top of the damage done when he rescued his father from the fire. Living at such close quarters, it had been hard not to see. He'd been scarred for life. A man could live with scars, but this burn, which had been the slowest to heal, was now inflamed to the point of looking raw, with red streaks spreading out beyond the original wound. There were ill humours in it, without a doubt. It's impossible to keep up a supply of clean, dry bandages, Carolus said, his voice held carefully calm. Pity there are no spare shirts to tear up. Lucas was still conscious, if barely. He'd probably hear whatever they said. She must match Carolus's control. Perhaps something different for the poultice. Coltsford, if it grows somewhere nearby. Blackberry leaves? The questions hung in silence. They must all know Lucas would not be able to go on for several days at least. He was lying with his head on a folded cloak and his eyes closed. Carolus was unrolling a length of linen, perhaps the last clean supply. Mattis gathered the old bandage and the shirt Lucas had been wearing, adding them to a heap of items to be rinsed out and hung by the fire to dry. Alexis wasn't saying a thing. As for Flip, she was back in dog form and looking as if she intended to curl up by Lucas's side for a nap. "No, Flip," Stasia said aloud, and sent her a mind picture of Lucas sleeping alone while Flip herself lay on someone else's bedding. But her mind soon moved to a different matter. All the men were here. It was quiet, and she had something to say. "I think we have to give up searching for Pavale. We're exhausting ourselves when the chance of finding him is slight. We need to let Lucas rest and recover for however long it takes, and then move on. What happened earlier tells me there's truth in those old tales about the forest and the hermit. There could be more nasty surprises, tricks that couldn't happen out in the world we're used to. I see things in visions sometimes, in the fire or in the water, and not all of them are good. There have been signs on the way up, some of them telling us we're on the right track, and some warning us off. I know it sounds crazy, that's why I didn't say anything for a while, but we can't ignore those signs." "Real life can be crazy," observed Mattis, looking around at the others. "Crazy and wild. A surprise at every turn, and not all of them good ones. Stasia, how do you tell the difference between good signs and bad ones?"
"I can't, not really. It's more a feeling. What happened to Carolus and me,
there's no doubt at all that was a warning. We could have died. I used to see the good signs back at Clearwater sometimes, before all this began. I took those to mean that someone recognized Lucas and me as friends of the forest."
Nobody said a word.
"We need to be careful. Not only of the rulers people coming after us, careful of the mountain and its secrets. Watchful. Respectful." Alexis spoke at last. "If the mountain is going to welcome anyone, surely it will be you, Stasia." His simple words, spoken with unusual feeling, robbed her of the ability to say a thing. Her face felt hot, and her heart was performing a strange little dance.
"He's right," said Mattis. "The land knows you as a friend, I think, despite what happened earlier. Whether that carries over to the rest of us as your companions remains to be seen. I see Lucas is wearing your amber owl, Stasia. That was generous of you."
Not generous, Stasia thought, only common sense. If there was a chance an amber token could help folk heal, it made sense for Lucas to wear hers now.
She missed it. She would rather have kept it close, its small presence warmed by her body.
She said, avoiding further discussion. After another silence, Mattis said,
"Tea, everyone? And then I'll wash these things. Might be the last chance for a while."
38. Alexis. They were seated by the fire again, with the long day turning to night. Mattis had made a familiar soup, using wild mushrooms and herbs gathered by Carolus and Stasia, and flavoured with a few slivers of the salt fish. Considering their circumstances, it was a good meal. Alexis had relaxed the requirement that there always be someone awake at night. The lack of sleep was taking a toll. Not that he slept much himself. Each day must bring the pursuit closer. When they did get moving, they'd be slower. Lucas would be weakened by this illness. Chances were this tale that they were living would be not a heroic saga, but a story of bitter failure. But no, he must not think that way. Stasia would say that a tale could end in all sorts of ways, that the teller could steer it according to their own wishes. He must move on and make the next part happen.
Balance, Alex, his father had said long ago. You need to hold the balance.
People had forgotten that when Elisabetta became ruler. Perhaps she had never really understood it. Bishop Petrus, he suspected, had never grasped what it meant. And now the Northlands was teetering on the brink, a once strong and peaceful realm, falling under the control of individuals governed by their hunger for power, their need for control, outweighing their understanding of those for whom they had responsibility. Some, like Rihard, were not true leaders. That was a man trying to do a job he'd never been fitted for. A man desperate to make up for past errors. A man clinging to his last threads of authority and doing appalling damage as a result.
Oh, Lord Casimir, Alexis thought, you would weep to see how quickly your peaceful realm turned to the dark once you were gone. He wanted to say, I will make it right. I will restore the balance. But he could not. Not yet. It was not for one man or woman to make such a promise.
He studied his companions on the journey. Stalwart, dark-bearded Mattis, a friend since they were young. Carolus, a quick-witted man with the hands of a physician and the strength of an elite fighter. Lucas, who might yet prove asset or burden. And Stasia, the irreplaceable Stasia, whom he lacked the words to describe. Without Pavel, they were only five, but great works often started small. Given the time they needed, this could grow and grow and become something great. With the death of Lord Casimir, the heart had been ripped out of the Northlands, but it was not entirely broken. It could be restored if the people kept faith, stayed strong, held their nerve. Sometimes the thought of what lay ahead filled him with terror. To lead such a movement was to risk all, not only for himself but for those who put their faith in him and his cause. He bore their suffering as his own burden. He grieved their loss invisibly as another wound to the heart. Hold the balance, gains and losses, a step forward, a fall backward, maintaining the pretense where he needed to. Speaking the truth when it was the time.
Alex?
Stasia's voice jolted him back to the here and now. He met her gaze, lifted his brows in question. I'll tell the next part of my story tonight. Maybe you can tell us the rest of yours. It feels like time you trusted us with that.
She meant, tell us the whole truth. The dangerous truth. He hadn't expected that so soon. But he couldn't make any assumptions about Stasia. She was full of contradictions and surprises. Those oddities added up to a person of formidable strength, a person who understood what hold the balance meant.
Go ahead then, he said. She had given them several installments of her animal tale as they made their way up the mountain. Hawk and his companions had progressed through some dramatic adventures and had formed an iron-strong bond despite their differences. Their strange company had become smaller. Squirrel had been snatched away by ghosts, never to be seen again. Somehow, the way Stasia told it, the whole thing was entirely believable. Tonight, she had Hawk and his expedition surprised in the forest by a pack of wolves who circled, growling deep in their throats, making foxes' hackles rise. Goat swung his head to and fro, displaying his fearsome horns. Hawk dived and rose, demonstrating his own mode of attack, but the wolves only moved in closer. Bear, Stasia explained, had been delayed after picking up an interesting scent and was quite a distance behind the rest. When the wolves were close enough to be plainly visible, the human character, storyteller, intervened.
Now the thing about storytellers, Stasia said, is that they sometimes jump the barrier of language.
Sometimes what they say, or rather what they see in their mind, can reach creatures who lack the gift of human speech. Thus, it happened this time, and just as well, or Hawks's friends might have been dinner for the wolf pack. None of them heard Storyteller speak, but she stood very still and lifted her hands, and they knew she was sending some kind of message, for her eyes were distant, and her face was curiously blank, as if she had stepped into another realm entirely. As for the little dog, who was her constant companion, the creature startled them all by sprouting miniature wings and flying to the woman's shoulder, where it settled with a soft hoot. It had become a tiny owl, for a storyteller can turn things any way that suits her. She can conjure magic from nothing, provided folk are willing to listen. So she held out her hands and stood quiet, and after a time the growling in the shadowy depths of the wood diminished, then faded right away. A creature with excellent hearing, such as a fox in fear of attack, would have detected the soft pad of the wolves' feet as they retreated into the forest. "They are gone," Storyteller said aloud. "I promised them peace. We must keep that promise." She turned her gaze on Bear, who had caught up now, and was perhaps the only one who might have considered a wolf as a possible supper, and Bear gave something close to a nod, showing he understood. Stasia looked around the group and smiled. "That's all for now. I'm too tired to go on." The silence drew out. Who could have thought a man who had been senior advisor to two rulers of the Northlands might find it so hard to get a single word out? "Tell the story. Tell the truth," he willed himself. But still, he sat mute. Mattis got up and started a fresh round of tea preparations, with somewhat more clinking and clanging that was strictly necessary. "Don't mind me," he said, managing to sound completely natural. "Start whenever you like." Which was nonsense, of course, since Mattis and Carolis both knew the whole story already, but it helped Alexis to take the first step. "Very well, then," he gathered himself. Long years after young Marcus went missing in the forest, later to be assumed dead, I heard a rumour. It sounded far-fetched. A pure invention. I don't usually give credence to such tales, but I had never forgotten my lost friend, and this story touched me. It made me hope. He paused, looking directly at Stasia. The firelight on her face, the keen attention in her eyes. I'd grown up at court. When my father died, I took his place as senior advisor to the ruler. First to Lord Casimir, and then to Lady Elisabetta. Dragon's Keep under her rule is no place for imagination or wonder or anything beyond the known world, and this was only a fragment of a tale, passed on third or fourth hand, unreliable, barely believable. But it was a tale of a lost child found and protected, and raised far from home. The details were vague, nothing as to how, or precisely where, or by exactly whom. It might have been a story from ancient times, but it could have been a tale of my own time. I was already concerned about the future of the Northlands. I was aware certain leaders were erring in their decisions. I thought of Marcus, of what kind of man he might have grown to be, and of what he might achieve if I could find him and bring him home. Mattis chose that moment to put a steaming cup in his hands and then to set his own large hand reassuringly on Alexis's shoulder. "What are you saying?" Stasia's eyes were wide. Marcus was the only child of Lord Casimir. He would have become ruler on Lord Casimir's death. He was raised in peaceful ways. If he had grown to be a man, he would have learned to keep the balance as his father did. He would have governed his realm wisely.
but everyone believed him dead. When Lord Casimir died of a malady, the best physicians in the Northlands could not banish. Elisabetta was the next in line. A capable, competent woman, so folk believed, though she had been raised far from court and had seldom visited Dragon's Keep. Lord Casimir's death was a shock. The way things played out afterward was, none of us was ready for it. They sat quiet for a while, thinking. It was Lucas who finally spoke up, his voice a shadow of what it had been. Say he did survive, and was raised by someone who lived up there on the mountain, why wouldn't they bring him home? It's cruel to keep a child from his family, and he'd be changed by this, no matter what. Twisted, warped, taken off his true course. Yes, he'd be a man by now, but not the same man he would have been if he'd grown up with his family and his friends and the familiar places of his childhood. He might be... His voice tailed off, as if whatever came next was too terrible to speak aloud. Unsuited to rule? Alexis could not keep the bite from his voice. Not ready to rule, said Stasia. Perhaps even less ready than Lady Elisabetta was. He might find him, and he might not want to come back. How to answer that question, which he'd pondered over for hour on hour. I'm not a fool, he said. There are plans in place. There have been for some time. How do you think we managed to get away from Dragon's Keep that night undetected? Only with help from folk who live and work there. Folk who support this cause, but keep their allegiance secret for obvious reasons. Not many have the full story. It's too dangerous to share, but they know we are working for a better future. And that explains why there were safe places to stay. Those farms, those households so ready to take us in without question, to take the horses. It's been a long while in the planning, said Mattis. The support is widespread. But everything needs to be covert. You'll understand why. And all because of a tale. Stasia's gaze was warm now. Something about it felt almost healing. Who'd have thought you had it in you, Alex? The stern court advisor. Her mouth quirked into a crooked smile. He found himself smiling back, despite the weight of the whole situation. If we manage to find him, and if he's willing to come with us, we most certainly don't plan to head straight back to court and present him publicly as the true heir, he said. Many folk are loyal to Elisabetta, and others are too fearful to risk speaking out against her. His return will need careful managing, but I have faith in him. Even at 10 years old, he had qualities that shone bright as a beacon of hope. Another like his father. But we must prepare him, and we ourselves must be prepared. That will take time. And first we have to get there, Carolus said. Whether that means all the way to the hermit, or to some point where the truth becomes plain. All the way, I think. Stasia might have been speaking to herself. The place in my visions looks like the hermit, as I imagine it. A rock wall, a cave, and the old woman. If she's real, if those are visions of now, maybe she's the one who rescued him all those years ago. 39. Stasia. The days passed, the weather warmed, and the new poultices worked their own kind of magic. Maybe the amber owl played a part. Though not entirely his old self, Lucas recovered well enough to go on, though he still tired quickly, slowing their progress. The increasingly steep terrain was an added challenge. It grew harder to find adequate shelter, and there were some uncomfortable nights. Flip was restless again, changing her form when there seemed no real need for it, or flying one way, then the other way, as if unable to decide which would be safer or quicker. Stasia could get nothing useful from her. By night, in her dog form, she pressed close against Stasia under the blanket, sometimes waking with a start, sometimes whimpering in her sleep. As they climbed higher, Stasia saw more and more signs. Stones balanced in ways that seemed unnatural. Long, spindly grasses whose leaves were woven into patterns even as their roots held fast to the hard ground. A flat leaf holding a tiny harvest of berries that must have come from lower down, for the terrain they were crossing now was a place of bald stone, treacherous gravel, and a few spiky bushes. She did not eat the berries, tempting as they were. They were clearly set out as an offering to some god or spirit. Here and there were hollows, places where a creature might snatch a rest or hide from birds of prey, and there were mountain goats, strong and nimble. Lucas proved his worth the first time they encountered the creatures. Alexis was in the lead with Lucas behind him. Their path wound through a defile with steep rock walls on either side, and as they rounded a bend, there in front of them was an animal so formidable they stopped dead. The goat lowered his head as he saw them, as if to charge forward and skewer Alexis on his horns. Backing up was not an option. Stasia was right behind Lucas, the others behind her, and the look in the goat's eyes was not one of retreat. "Duck," Lucas spoke in an urgent undertone. "Now." As Alexis did so, Lucas drew a deep breath and raised his voice in a call that took Stasia right back to past times when he was working the goats through the gate, a long, strong note sliding up to a higher-pitched cry. "Oop! Oop!" A goat herd had his own magic, even if the goats in question live wild and free on a mountain. Stasia understood that, but she still watched in wonder as Lucas gestured, holding both hands up in the air, palms forward, then making a pushing motion above the crouching Alexis's head. This held the goat briefly still. Lucas seized the moment to edge past the other man and stand directly facing the animal. He gave the cry again, this time in a more insistent tone. "Oop!" The goat tried the lowered head once more, showing this upstart man how splendid and sharp his horns were. But Lucas held his ground, feet slightly apart, head high, back straight, hands making the order clear, that way. Stasia found herself counting silently. 1, 2, 3. The goat backed up, demonstrating the considerable skill such animals have on mounting tracks. As the creature ceded ground, taking its time, Lucas moved forward step by careful step, with the others following, Alexis, Stasia, Carolus, and Mattis as rear guard. By the time they had emerged from the defile, the creature was nowhere to be seen. Stasia did not pause to think, but threw her arms around Lucas in a hug. "Well done," she said. Then suddenly aware that all eyes were on them, she stepped back, releasing him. His cheeks were flushed. She must have embarrassed him. For a moment, she had forgotten that the easy trust between them no longer existed. "Thank you, Lucas," Alexis said. "I think you just saved my life."
"Or at least your pretty face," put in Mattis. "That was a fine set of horns."
Lucas made no comment, save for a nod of acknowledgement.
"Goat magic," said Carolus. "Remarkable. How did you know the creature wouldn't flip you over its head and leave you in a mangled heap?"
That caught a smile from Lucas.
"I didn't," he said.
"But it works with the goats at home, so I thought I might as well try it."
"Well done, friend."
Carolus gave him a comradely slap on the shoulder. "I would answer any time, friend, but I'm hoping there won't be another time. With luck, he'll spread the word that we're not to be meddled with." They moved on with Stasia in the lead, picking out a route in an area of broken rocks, sudden dips and rises, and increasingly narrow pathways. One foot placed wrong, and a person might fall so far there would be no coming back. After some time, a solitary larch came into sight, a towering giant of a tree standing atop a rise. Stasia halted, gazing up at it without speaking. A sentinel, a marker.
provided it was not like that place where she and Carolus had found themselves, facing a different world.
"Up there," she said. "There should be a useful view ahead."
Flip responded instantly, becoming a bird and flying away to a light high in the larch. Oh, for a pair of wings. They could have completed this weary journey in a single day. At the top of the rise, they halted under the great tree, silenced by the sight before them. Ahead, miles ahead, was a still higher peak, crowned with a rock formation that could only be the Hermit. It was of remarkable size and steepness, and it wore a robe of green. There were pines up there, and summer-leafed trees as well, though Stasi was not sure what kind they were. The end was in sight at last, but a formidable challenge lay ahead. The terrain dipped again, narrowing to a ridgeway barely broad enough for one person to walk along. To one side, the land dropped away to bare rock, fissured and cracked. A fall onto this would be certain death. To the other side, the slope held here and there a tenacious bush or small clinging tree. Around these was a nightmare of small stones on which even a sure-footed mountain goat would be hard put to find a purchase. A fall to that side might not instantly kill a traveller, but climbing back up would be near impossible. The ridgeway ran for some 30 paces before it broadened. On the other side, there would be room for their whole group, and from that point, it was not far to the next tract of forest. 30 paces. It might as well be 30 miles. Mattis muttered an oath. Carolus scratched his beard, a sure sign that even he, the fittest of them all, was uneasy. Lucas stood quiet, arms folded, his face revealing nothing. Stasia glanced at Alexis, saw that he had gone sheet white, and looked quickly away. "He's scared of heights," she thought, remembering his account of the day Marcus went missing and the impossible ledge. There was something on the ground by her feet. She crouched down to examine it. Twigs, feathers, stones. This was no random scattering of bits and pieces. It was a pattern. "It's a warning," she said, rising to her feet. "Something like, proceed at your own peril." "I hate to say this, but it looks almost too risky." Gods, what if this had to be done with one's eyes closed? How could she possibly ask that of them? "It's doable. Keep moving steadily. Look ahead, not down." Lucas sounded remarkably calm. "Arms out to the sides for balance. Don't forget to breathe." Carolus was already adjusting his pack to sit more securely. Mattis looked doubtful. "Would it be worth backtracking, Alex? Stasia? This surely can't be the only way in and out of the Hermit. I don't like the look of it at all." "I'm sure there are other ways," Stasia said, "but finding them might well mean going all the way back and starting again." She glanced at Alex. "That would be inviting a different kind of trouble, yes?" "We can't go back," he said. "Not now." Something in his tone clutched at Stasia's heart, but there was nothing she could say. Mattis cleared his throat. "There's a mist coming in," he observed. "If we're going on, we should move now. We should cross this thing at least. Then, if we can't see far enough ahead, there's room on the other side to bunker down and wait for it to clear." "Who's for trying this?" Alexis asked. One by one, slowly, they all put their hands up. Carolus, Lucas, Mattis, Stasia. No backing out now. "Right. Have a drink and check your gear is secure. Carolus, you should take the lead." She had to speak. "Alex, I should go first. And you need to follow my instructions, all of you, no matter what I say. This may be a different sort of place." Silence from the men. Nobody challenged her. Stasia looked up into the tree but saw no sign of Flip. She made a mind picture of the little bird flying straight across the ridgeway, finding a secure perch and waiting until they were all safely over. There was no response. Was that a bad sign? Wouldn't Flip warn her if she was walking into danger? Or had she flown on elsewhere while nobody was looking? No time to ponder. "All ready?"
She tried to keep her voice calm and confident. Ready. Carolus had taken the position behind her. Then came Alexis, Mattis, and Lucas at the rear. Look straight ahead, she told herself. It's not so far. She stepped out onto the narrow path. They were halfway over when the mist came down around them, blanketing the land below and ahead, swirling, as if with a mind of its own. Mattis cursed. Carolus made some sort of reply, his tone calm. Just keep walking, she told herself. It shouldn't be hard. A voice came from the mist, making her wobble. Then a hand, brushing her face, chill as the depths of winter. Another voice, another touch, words in a language unknown to her, but the meaning was clear. Help us, traveller, help us in our trouble. Save us from despair, or die as we did, broken and bloody on the mountain. The fingers again, pulling at her clothing, poking at her face. An illusion. It had to be. It was all in her mind. She mustn't think of falling. A sharp clap of hands behind her, as one of the comrades tried to scare something off. The sound echoed strangely. Mattis cursed again. And now, within the swirls and waves of thickening mist, she saw them. Men, or the shadows of men, for they were surely no longer living. Their eyes were hollow, empty. Their limbs were spindly, their hands long-fingered, like claws reaching for her. Halt! She shouted, struggling to stay upright. The beings were all around her. Help us! They wailed, as they plucked at her garments, threatening her balance. Their shrill pleas made her heart ache. We can never leave this place. Endless sorrow is ours. Help us, or fall and shed your lifeblood as we did. Through shifting shreds of mist, she glimpsed them far below in the ravine. Their once strong bodies, now no more than shattered bones and staring skulls. The dreadful aftermath of some long-ago conflict. Yet at the same time they were here beside her, sobbing, screaming, a cacophony of woeful voices. They called for their wives, their mothers, their sweethearts, and there was nobody to answer them. What use your hearth magic now? You cannot even save yourself. A bony arm reached around her waist. This was no dead warrior, but something old and dark and sinister. Don't touch me! She gasped out as her gut churned with terror. She squeezed her eyes shut, clapped her hands over her ears, felt her legs turn to jelly. Why couldn't she be strong? A shout went through her like a blow. Mattis falling. Lucas crying out, the sound cut off abruptly. She forced her eyes open, made herself turn, just in time to see Alex toppling over the edge, enveloped by a figure all mist and shadows. No! She yelled, stop! Her heart was racing, her throat tight with horror. Carolus, Lucas, are you there? Nothing but the mist. She was all alone, alone save for... Jump, something said deep in her mind. Go on, jump. A rock-hard hand touched her back, as if preparing to push. Get it over, quickly. Hearth witch, your kind is not welcome here. Even as she fought for balance, even as shock and grief tore at her, something flared to life inside her, burning bright. Help us, they'd pleaded. And she could, despite everything. Even though she could no longer see them, hear them, they were here. She could reach them. And even in the darkest place, there had to be hope. Flowers blooming after a winter storm. Young oaks growing up around the fallen ancestor. Alex, oh gods, Alex holding on to the fragile thread of hope because of a story. Lucas following her into this place of peril. She stretched out her arms again, ignoring the touch of the malign hand, fought to slow her breathing, imagined the mother watching over her, and opened her mind fully to the lost ones. I hear you, she called aloud, making mind pictures for them as she spoke. I honour your loss. In the world of the living, your loved ones remember you. They weep for your passing. They tell tales of your brave life and your sacrifice.
Your children tell your story. Your community celebrates your courage. You were kind fathers, loyal brothers, faithful sweethearts, loving sons. Be at peace now.
One last mind picture. A mother's arms around her son. A tear shed in acknowledgement of his pain.
They love and honour you, brave hearts. You will never be forgotten.
Her own tears were coming fast now, threatening to blind her, even as the mist thinned to wisps and the ground was once more visible beneath her feet. Above her a solitary bird flew, but the Ridgeway was empty. They had fallen, all of them.
A great sob burst from her. Gone. Lost. Her friends. Her comrades.
Let yourself fall, came the voice from behind her. Make it quick. Why suffer? Join your foolish companions. Pay your fee.
I will pay you no fee. I am a friend of the forest, sworn to protect and preserve it.
She hardly recognized her own voice. It had become iron strong. She would not give up, not even after this.
If she was the last one left, it was for her to complete the mission. And if she could speak to those things, those departed souls, if in this strange realm the landscape could change in the blink of an eye, maybe, just maybe, hope could work a magic of its own.
One step at a time. That being was still present, vile, threatening. She could feel it behind her. With all her fading strength, she reached out to flip again.
Help!
Sunlight struck down through the last shreds of mist, golden bright, and across the sky flew a great bird, crow-like in shape. This was no creature of flesh and feathers, but a thing of bones and air. Its eyes carried the light. It opened its beak to release not a cawing sound, but a strange kind of music, a song whose message was clear.
Come, come with me.
A swirling mass of spectral beings arose from the depths and followed the crow as it flew over the Ridgeway, as if in a farewell display, then away across the great forest of Hartwood. Stasia heard something collapse behind her, as if into fragments of bone. She watched the flying dance of ghosts until she could no longer see them, then made herself walk, one shaky step at a time, to the other side of the Ridgeway. She took off her pack, turned, and made herself look back, hoping for a miracle. Sunlight still illuminated the narrow pathway, but nobody was there.
40. Lucas. He came to with a start, to find Carolus bending over him.
Lucas, are you still with us? I need your help.
Where in the name of heaven were they? A sharp rise to one side, a ravine to the other.
Don't try to move yet, Carolus said. We've fallen onto a sort of shelf, a thing that wasn't here before, and Mattis is stuck. Sit up slowly, let me help you.
He could sit, that was a good thing. But they were... He looked about. They were in an impossible spot.
He must have been knocked out. What had happened? He couldn't remember falling, let alone all of them falling, though it felt as if he had new bruises.
Mattis was groaning in pain. He was wedged between the branches of a small spiky bush that looked barely strong enough to support his weight. Alexis was trying to cut him free, while standing on the same unlikely shelf not far off. Lucas looked up. A long way to the top. Long and steep. And his heart lurched. He forced the words out. Where's Stasia? The pause before Carolus spoke told its own tale, as did the way he kept his voice to a murmur. We don't know. Right now we need to free Mattis, then try to get him up to the top. I think he's dislocated his shoulder. It'll be almost impossible for him to climb, but I can't deal with the injury down here.
Stasia, fallen to her death. It couldn't be true. She couldn't be gone forever.
Lucas made himself stand, though his body hurt all over. Made himself speak,
I'll carry Mattis's pack up, then climb back down. It'll take all three of us to get him to the top.
Good. See if you can get the packs over to the safe side.
Take care on the way. We need you.
Briefly, Carolus put a hand on Lucas's shoulder. It was the recognition of a bond between brothers.
Alex, what can I do to help?
Lucas was halfway up when a tawny butterfly appeared, fluttering in to land on his arm as he attempted a particularly tough haul between the awkward purchases this cliff allowed. He swallowed another curse. The butterfly flew upward, just far enough to show him there was a good handhold he hadn't spotted before. He stretched for the projecting stone, positioned his right foot, dragged himself up. The butterfly moved again, hovering over a crack where he might possibly wedge the toes of his left foot to support the next effort. It moved its wings as if to say, "Come on, then," and he did so. Any help was welcome, though the thought of trying to get matters up here appalled him. Now the butterfly fluttered away from him, up to the top, then came down again. Was it trying to make him fall now? A voice from up above.
Lucas? There's a good handhold about an arm's length above you to your left. Take your time.
Stasia sounded as if she was crying.
Crying, but being a leader.
Doing her job. His own tears had begun the moment he heard her voice. She was alive. By all that was wonderful, she was alive.
Pass the pack to me, she said as he reached the top.
Somehow, he managed to get the thing off his back without dropping it. Could that butterfly have been Flip? There was no sign of dog or bird now, but he was in no doubt that something had helped him. But there'd been those shadow men in the mist, pulling them down, wanting them to die. Crazy. The whole thing was crazy. It made no sense at all. But never mind that. Stasia was here. She was safe. Right now, that was all that mattered.
I'm going back down, he said, allowing himself one long look at her face, seeing the tears, knowing that however hard this had been for the rest of them, it was doubly so for her.
Mattis is injured. Stay here. We'll need you to help get him up. And he would have said something more, but he heard Mattis groaning and headed back down instead. This was too big for words. There was no time to speak of what might or might not have happened, or how it was they had all survived. Mattis was in terrible pain. The awkward climb to safety had been a nightmare. His screams fit to curdle the blood. It would have made sense to get right away from this cursed spot, to walk to that nearest tract of forest and find a place of shelter before doing anything else. But the big man's face was a mask of suffering. What had to be done must be done here, now, at the end of the ridgeway, where there was enough level ground for them to spread out some bedding and take off their packs. All of them were exhausted and shocked, but there would be no resting for a while yet.
His shoulder joint's out of place, Carolus explained, fishing items from his pack, while Lucas and Alex settled Mattis on the bedding, doing their best to keep him calm.
We need to get it back in position quickly. Ever helped with something like this before, Stasia?
Broken limbs, yes, but not this. Tell me what to do and I'll help as best I can.
Carolus gave her an assessing glance, then spoke in a murmur, with his back to the injured man.
I want you kneeling beside him, on his good side, and keeping him as still as you can. This is going to hurt him a lot, and he'll probably fight against it. Stay strong and steady. Once I get the joint back in place, the acute pain will die down, perhaps quite quickly.
Stasia moved into position without a word.
One hand on his left shoulder and a strong hold on the left arm. I'll be exerting a lot of force on the right arm while I manipulate the joint back into place. Keep hold no matter what. We don't want to have to repeat this.
Somehow, Carolus was managing to sound steady, calm, confident. He crouched down beside the injured man, who was moaning in pain.
Mattis, I won't lie to you. This is going to hurt like the devil, but it has to be done. I'll be as quick as I can, and it'll help if you can stay still.
Lucas, we may need you to help hold him. Keep alert, everyone, and do as I say. We all work together, yes? He bent to take off his boots, surprising Lucas. No words could truly capture what followed. Later, Lucas remembered how quiet they had been coming up the mountain, what care they had taken to avoid raising their voices above a murmur, lest pursuers should hear them. Stasia knelt by Mattis, holding him firmly and murmuring words of comfort. Carolus, standing on Mattis's other side, took hold of the injured arm, stuck his bare foot, toes first, into Mattis's armpit, and pulled hard. The big man let out a shout that rang far, far across Hartwood Forest. Birds rose from the trees nearby, screaming in response. Still pulling on the arm, Carolus performed a twisting, turning maneuver, waited a moment, then relaxed his hold. Mattis released a great sigh. It was as if the tension left his body almost instantly. A kind of magic, Lucas thought, or as close to it as you could get. It's done, Carolus said. Just lie there a while, friend. You'll need that arm in a sling before you move. Lucas, you might see if there's something we can use. Anyone want to give up a shirt? He'll need some strapping around the chest, too, to keep the arm safe as it heals. I'll prepare a draft for him. Painful experience, that. Mattis put his good hand over his eyes and muttered, "Great heavens, man." Oh, that felt like being ripped apart. Thought I might pass out. Carolus was carefully measuring something from a small bottle into a cup, then topping it up from a water skin. Lucas, help him hold that arm across his chest, bent like this. Go gently. Now, help him sit up. Slowly does it. Yes, good. Just sit a while, Mattis. Breathe. And when you're ready, drink this. One sip at a time. Try to keep still while I get this sling organized. First, torture. Then, poison, Mattis said, with the ghost of a smile. No poison, just good herbs. I don't think we're ready to talk about what just happened, but we can't move on for a while. Stasia, could you manage a story? Then, when Mattis is ready, we'll find a safer spot to camp. Carolus glanced at Alexis, now crouched by Mattis's side. We can't go far, certainly not before everyone's had a night's sleep. Carolus, Mattis croaked. Thank you. Thank all of you. No need for thanks. Just recover soon, will you? Nobody makes tea the way you do. 41. Stasia. If she ever had to make a mind picture of exhaustion, this would be it. Alex had a faraway look in his eyes, as if, like her, he was gazing into a series of dark possibilities. Even Carolus, who often seemed strong enough to go on forever, was lying on the ground now, with his head resting on a rolled-up blanket. What with the unkempt hair, the scruffy beards and the clinging dirt of the journey, the men resembled a pack of sad vagrants, and no doubt she looked just as dishevelled. But those things only helped make them what they were. Comrades in adversity. True brothers and one sister. Two sisters, if you counted Flip. A story. She was so tired. Tired and sore and sad, even though by some miracle they had survived this. As for what had just happened, she might not be ready to tell that story for a long time. She still couldn't quite get her head around it. This story now should be about gratitude. They had survived, all of them, and it was not only human endeavour that had seen them through this. The mountain had challenged them, yes. It had shown a dark and evil face, but it had allowed them to move forward. Someone, or something, had shown them the way. "Are you brave enough?" she began.
That was the question the strange group of travellers faced when they reached the perilous slopes and hidden traps of the faraway mountain. Are you strong enough?